So for me, doing this, the data product with the data contract, the right definitions, the right guardrails and policies in place will make it AI ready.
Hello and welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. I'm Carsten Bange, founder and CEO of BARC, and my guest today is Noemi Moreno-Fabello, and she's head of data strategy and architecture at Cambridge University Press and Assessment. And she will share with us how their data strategy looks like and what central part data products take. So we will hear about how they build the data products, what best practices they employ, but also the fundamental role of data contracts to be really the place where the agreement is being made, how a data product is being built, is being used, the quality, the governance around it, and so on. And I think Noemi really shared a lot of good practices here, how to think about data products, what the benefits are, and she also shares how they measure the success with data products. So their metrics to basically show the ROI that investments in data and data products are really beneficial for the organization. All that and a lot more is part of this episode. I think it was a fascinating one. Enjoy it too. Hi, Noemi. Very nice to meet you.
Very nice seeing you, Carsten. Thank you for having me here.
Oh, absolutely. And thanks for joining us. And I wanted to start with a very general question. You're head of data strategy and data architecture. So maybe you can give us a bit of an overview. Yeah, what's the scope of your work? What are you concerned with right now? What are you doing? So we get an idea and a feeling what data strategy and data architecture looks like at Cambridge University Press.
Sure. It's a very big kind of word. So when people say the word data is a very big word. It covers from data engineering, statistics, files, storage, emails, all sorts of different things that all seem to mean data. And in data strategy and architecture, we try to look at all of it in one way, form or another, and try to give it shape so that it reaches the right people at the right time by the right channels of, the traditional kind of a story around data. Our purpose is to enable the organization to remove all of the friction, so to enable the organization to have access to their data and remove the friction in order to get to it. Now, that sounds big, and it is big, because depending on the size of the organization, it can actually be quite dramatic and complex. But at the end of the day, data is like the blood within the systems. It flows through from A to B. It provides the oxygen, to the different organs. It takes the oxygen from the lungs and moves it across. So our role is to find how that data moves from one system to the other. Why is it important that goes from A to B? How do people make decisions, whether they are a customer service person and they need to have the customer's information in front of them, and how they act with it, to reports and management, consolidation of P&L or whatever that might be. And in each of those roles, that data needs to be presented in a way that they can make informed decisions without challenging or concerning themselves of their quality or how that data is useful. So our role is, what does our state look like now and what the state could look in the future, and how do we make that better and that data more accessible? And with the whole explosion of AI in the recent years, how do we make that even more programmatically accessible and faster to innovate? So that's roughly an overall view. I don't know if it's quite too broad or too narrow, but that's kind of like the role.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's great. It gave us a great overview. And before I ask you the question, so now how do you do that? Because you already said that's your task. Just one question. How's the setup of your team? So how large is it? And what do you do? Is it only conceptual and strategic, or do you also implement?
So we are a central team. We work for the whole organization. We have kind of like a matrix style. So there are data engineering in many of the different business units within the organization, both in the business units as well as in a core technology or shared services. We are a team about 20 people. We try to work with all of them and help them bring standards across the whole organization, by standards being standards of governance, ownership, engineering best practices, which kind of drives a lot of the stuff on the surface as well. And it requires a little bit of understanding of the overall organization in one level, but also at the business unit level, to understand what they need to achieve as an individual unit, as well as an overall organization, and how the data structures and practices should move around all of them.
Mm-hmm. And how big is the organization in total?
I should know this. About 7,000 people, roughly, give or take.
Yeah, just to get an idea on size. Great. Now, let's get back to the intro, or the big question. And I know it's a big one as well, but so how do you do it? So how do you basically achieve everything you mentioned, that data flows better, that people are better informed, that data is better used in the organization overall?
So I'm going to cover it in a peculiar way. So I started my career in software engineering, and I've moved into data because we make decisions based on that. And gradually started to grow and grow, and how data flows and how it's presented and all of this until the day of today. And there is one thing that is always common is the whole, you know, when it was applied to websites, they don't make me think. So you're trying to make something or do something and make it right. But you don't necessarily have the right information in front of you. And a lot of the time we argue about where that data is, if it's in a silo, who's the owner, what does this feel mean? How do I get access to that data? Who's the person who worked in that project, you know, 3 years ago that may be able to give us some information? So all of these questions and concerns and challenges is present in many organizations. And over the past, I joined CUPIA about a year almost. Ooh. And like a big organization, like many others before it, the data is siloed, and each team will own it and protect it very closely, but at the same time want to expose it in ways that others could use it. But that kind of gap in between isn't clear. So previous data strategy iterations in this organization were focusing in the right things like ownership and governance. But without, that's kind of the upper layer of what data could be in an organization. There is a lower layer. So what does that mean in practical terms? How do you actually embed them? How do you implement that? There are many approaches you could go. You could say, well, we need to specify a document that someone needs to read it and someone needs to update it. And you can see how over time that kind of documents is not kept up to date as it should do. So the idea of don't make me think, going back to the whole usability, is, well, how can I make it so that doing the right thing is very easy and is straightforward, but doing the wrong thing is not so easy and actually cumbersome? And not by making the bad thing harder, but making the good thing a lot easier. And this is where the concept of data products and data mesh and these things come into play. So if we think about our data assets we put our data assets as a wrapper into a data product, something that we curate, we understand the right people are in it and understand that data. If we focus on the data engineering best practices to embed automatically and programmatically many of those processes that make that data discoverable and findable, and then we expose it in a, let's say, a data marketplace, or a place where you find in the Google of your data assets or your data products. On the other end, you're removing the friction of first the discovery of that data and the maintenance of that data, the exposure of that data to those that need to consume it, but also those that need to find that data, to find it in a way that is easy to them. They understand the details of that data set, who's the owner, what is governed, what are the policies that apply to them. And when they come to consume, and they understand what's available and when it's not available. And this fulfills two things. One is, I know what I'm consuming. These are the conditions. There's no argument about, oh, it should be hourly. Why is it not hourly? Or, you know, who's the owner for this? No, I need this other column. is clear. This is the contract. This is the information that you have available in this data product. And from the consumption or from a business point of view, you could say, well, actually, I need a different feed, or I need an anonymized feed, or I need a streaming feed. You can then put the right resources to make it available or to support that domain people to create that feed for you. So that journey of making that data accessible comes down to the practices and removing friction from every step of the way, from every persona that consumes that data, in order to make it available from the consumer side in a frictionless way.
Yeah, that sounds great. And it sounds like it addresses the challenge you mentioned, yeah, that data is siloed and then there's a gap, yeah, in wanting to provide data, but then also maybe not having the right means to do it. So let's definitely drill a little bit more closely down into that. And the first thing you mentioned, I found very interesting. You said we should employ engineering best practices to achieve these data product goals, like accessibility and so on. What do you think about? What are these best practices? Maybe you can give us a few examples.
So I've been a data developer before, mm-hmm. so I know what good data practices are and are not. When it comes to software, we have beautiful practices in place, DevOps, continuous improvement, continuous development, things that automate deployment and makes software delivery really fast and reliable to the help of the developer and to the help of those consuming that application. When it comes to data, somehow we always kind of lag behind. We don't apply those concepts in the same way. Someone would just go and build up a view, don't necessarily check it in or deploy it in the correct way. Someone has access because whatever, and go in and build new applications without the right constraints in place. Focusing on data engineering, making sure the right practices are in place, as in CI/CD, DevOps, or you know, some people would then say data ops. It's not quite the same, but it's still putting the right practices that are well tested in software applied to data engineering will mean that many of these steps on how you deploy data, how you make breaking changes or don't make breaking changes, become easier. Particularly when it comes to embedding, if you think about the data product or pipelines, if they are adhering to data engineering best practices, like in DevOps, like in software engineering, it means that many of those issues that we tend to have in terms of people accessing the data, getting something wrong and doing the wrong thing, disappear. You can embed, for example, checking. So if you look into the data products, and I'm quite a strong advocate, I guess, of data products and data contracts to ensure that we have that compliance in between. If you embed that data contract within your delivery pipeline, so when you deploy your code, first you do it properly. Second, you cross-check as part of your build against the contract. You will always know that you're adhering to your practices. You're adhering to what has been agreed, both from the producer, but also from the consumer side. So you know that you're sticking to what works for the organization on one side and is frictionless. And on the other side, you know that you will always receive what is being guaranteed by the contract.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big discussion, obviously, right now as well. Yeah, so what's in your data contracts? What is the actual content? Yeah, so what do you think people should agree on?
So in the contract, we are actually working on this and making sure that we adhere to the correct standard for our organization, because, of course, you know, everyone will try their own flavor. The data contracts should contain details about the schema, clearly, you know, what data is available. It should have the service level agreement. So is it supported? Who's looking after it? If I have an issue, who's going to look into it? The data quality checks. So how good and accurate that data set is for me. Each of the data products would be aligned to an output port. So, for example, if I'm exposing data that is sensitive information, it would contain the information about, not the data in itself, but the metadata that is of that data, and the access levels and what it can and cannot be used for. I think is particularly prevalent when it comes to agents and programmatic access. So if you want to build something that then goes and trolls around, find a data set and does something with it, in the contract, you could specify the governance of it, the what you can and cannot use it for. So there is a whole selection of it, the team that looks after it, a whole selection of details that makes that data quite robust for humans and non-humans to consume that information.
Yeah, I mean, that's something we have to think about now, yeah, that there might be agents already now, but definitely in the future. And I think it's a very important point. What do you mean when you talk about data products? I should have asked this maybe before, but I mean, you come from a data engineering standpoint, so obviously it's a lot about providing data assets. Do you also include things like reports, AI models, things like that? Or is it more like the basic data that you think is a data product?
Ooh, that's a very good question. I personally believe that is the minimum kind of, you know, like MVP, minimum viable product. So you bring it down to a small little asset. It could be a combination of many data assets. Arguably, you could argue that the report is in it or is a consumer of that data asset. So I see it more like the building blocks. You have these data assets. So let's say that you have a customer data product and you have an orders data product. Of course, they are related, mm-hmm. but you could build another data product that fits from those two to build the reports that you want to do. So you could use that customer for something else, for example, a recommending engine, which becomes, again, another product and so on. So it becomes a little bit complicated, and at the same time, it does not, because every time you build one, it becomes available, it's fair data, so findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable. But it means that that becomes available for reuse, which is one of the key things, and is interoperable, which means that you can connect it to multiple things. So you do the effort once, and you can consume it many, many times. And I think that's key for scalability.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I was just thinking that maybe also the contracts need to change. Yeah, if for example now a report is a data product. Yeah, I mean that's maybe a different way to agree on now what is being produced, yeah, in what way, what quality actually is, and so on. So that's why I was asking.
It would be multiple product contracts, because one output port could go into another feeding line. You might have to have another port that goes into the aggregate one, and each of those would have its own contract and is a different output port. So it's still the same data product with different kind of outputs that connects to the next one on top. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Who builds these data products? I'm also wondering.
Teams.
Yeah. Okay. I wonder. You mentioned data mesh. So how do you do?
Yeah. Again, still a strong advocate for domain teams to own this. In our case, we do have data engineering teams spread across the organization. We also have a centralized data engineering team. I'm not a black and white when it comes to this. I embrace hybrid as well. Because some systems, you can't just break it down and make them the transactional or the operational system own the analytical capability. So in a way, it's like you outsource, for better word, outsource that capability to a central team that has the platform and the capability to build it on your behalf and abide by those same contractual agreements. So they kind of do that for you and expose that to the outer world. I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, you did. Absolutely. And actually, this hybrid approach is also something that I see a lot. And I think that makes most sense. Yeah. And I thought it was an interesting aspect to think about teams owning already or having knowledge about systems. I think it's also about the available know-how in domains. Yeah? That often you find domains that don't have the skills or the resources, yeah, but they still like a central service. Yeah? They still want to use data products or provide them. So I think there are multiple reasons why hybrid is, in the end, the realistic approach to it. But you say, if possible, then you want to do it in the domain.
If it's applicable and it makes sense, yes, it should be done where it makes sense. I think the difficulty with the hybrid approach, or with a central team anyway, is is that the boundary between who, you know, when let's say is a system, a SAP application or, you know, an ERP or whatever, yeah, one that is not, you can't really create the data products at the source. You might mirror or stage that data into an analytical platform and then build the products around it in there. Up until now, that ownership and accountability gets lost on the way. No, someone changed something. Oh, that's the ERP system is not my problem as in a data platform engineering team. So the customer said, well, no, it's your problem because you're providing this to me. He says, no, it's not my problem. You know, you the others changed this thing. If you wrap around this with the data product approach, with a data contract, is clear where the boundary is and who's responsible for which part of the journey of that data. So is easier in the team. They don't get blamed so much. but also it makes it clear where that line is, where the change is in the source system and what needs to happen because there is a contract as well on that front.
Makes a lot of sense. How do you expose the data products? How do people find them? Do you have a marketplace or how do you do that also technically?
So we are in the process of, we don't yet have the marketplace. We are working on the data products and the data contracts. We're exploring, there are fantastic solutions right now available that fit very nicely into this journey. We are looking into some of them right now and it's literally a data market, a data product marketplace where you can publish the data product as well as the contracts and apply policies around both in the contract, but also generically. If we need to, as a result, it would be literally we are in the middle of evaluating right now. It would be a location for people can then search and find that information. We also have the data catalog, which also plays a role on how to classify and find all of our data assets. It's slightly before. So if you think about, you know, one level before of where our data assets are and how to find them. But the data product marketplace would be, well, this is the curated site. This is the overall product. Here is the owner and the policies and all of these things. And we publish it in there. We are in the middle of evaluating that and selecting our provider in the next month or two.
Okay. All right. I'm looking forward to hearing more about that. But now, okay. So we need a place where people can find data products, but I mean, you are in the Data Culture podcast, so we need to talk about data culture in a way. So that doesn't guarantee me that people will actually use them. So is that also a topic you are thinking about?
So this comes back to the persona and the different user experiences we're building. We're not just building a data product and that said, you're building experiences for the engineers to develop. So the CI/CD DevOps, embed them in the workflows to publish the information, but also to educate people around where to find that data. At the moment, it's all through, I say at the moment here and in many organizations in my past, it would be trying to find an SME that you can ask, where is that data? How can I get access to it? In these ways, providing that literacy saying, well, actually, we have this location now where you can find it. And if it doesn't exist, connect with us and we'll try to find out so that we can then produce it, whether it's through a project or a program or whatnot. There are various elements that go around this. A lot of people might complain about, oh, the data quality of this thing is not very good. And sometimes a data product is not going to address it. What it's going to address is looking at the process in itself. So let's say that you have system A that passes data to system B, but they're bypassing that product, you know, that process because things happen. Yeah. Well, I'm just going to export it. I manipulated my Excel and then I've uploaded it here. It's the you know, bread and butter of any organization. And then suddenly you have two data sets that don't match anymore. You can automate part of that. You could do data quality checks. But at the end of the day, that's not the root cause. That's a symptom of a failure in a process. So helping them first think about the process, what you're trying to do. Actually, you're bypassing this. Why is that? Let's look into what feature is not available in the source system so that you don't have to do that. And then the quality flows. There is a little bit of that. There is a little bit of overall and helping people understand that everyone has a role to play with data, whether you're a customer service representative and you're entering the details of a customer in the system, that you need to check, that is up to you. It's not just the system that should tell you that you're doing something wrong, that you have a role, an important role to curate that information. To the software engineers who are building these applications where the customer service person is entering information, to say, well, actually, I should be providing some checks to help the user enter the right information. It should also be to any, basically any person who touches that data. As I mentioned with the blood flow, every organ, you know, needs that blood going through it. So it's the same in here. The data will be moving throughout the system and going into other locations. So each of them have a role in that data and that journey. So helping them understand the importance of, you know, the role that they play and the importance that they have to influence the data quality in the organization is kind of part of that overall story. So it's, in summary, is about helping data engineers and technical leads understand what the importance of this overall concept is, helping the general population in the organization understand that data is something that matters to them and is important as well to them, what's in it for them, as well as the consumers from systems, business units, and whatnot, what's the importance of all of that placed to them as well.
Great. I'm always a fan of examples or practical insight. So how do you do that? How do you educate? How do you raise this awareness you mentioned?
We're on a quest of doing it in a marketing approach. I think it's you know, it works. We know. So we're trying to, there are many kind of facets to it. In a way, it's trying to target each of the audiences in the way that they understand and is meaningful for them so that they can see the benefit to them. Some of it is through internal videos, very, you know, up to date. So try to get that sort of snippets of information, using analogies sometimes to help understand. I think I'm known for using food and pantry and things like that to explain the concepts. Trying to make it digestible to the people in a way, in a format that is targeted to them. And when it comes to technical implementation, so data engineer, talking the same terms, talking in engineering terms, what it means to you, well, actually it means this in this GitHub repository and how this is how you embed it. So talking in the terms of each of them. It is a little bit consuming, but I think it's necessary. And do so, as I said, with someone in our organization that is fantastic in terms of communications to help us draft this out like a marketing campaign to be able to reach the people. We also run surveys to understand the literacy with people, how they see themselves, and we measure that across different points to see how we're progressing. Is not a you do it once and it's over. It's a never-ending journey to try to continue to evolve and to continue to help them to see how data is important to them and the benefit to themselves.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a big believer in the marketing approach. That's why in our data culture framework, communication is one of the six pillars. And that's all about marketing,
indeed,
communicating, etc. You talk about measuring, and that's a big topic or an increasing rising topic I see, is that data culture and data strategy, responsible people have to also measure and monitor success. Do you do that? Do you have to basically show how data products, for example, improve or bring benefits to the organization?
Yes, at the end of the day, every organization needs their ROI. So if they invest in this, they need to see, so what is it for me? Are we actually delivering more?
Right. How do you do that?
Painfully. We have few metrics. So the literacy I just mentioned is one. Mm-hmm. We are drafting. So there are multiple angles that we're looking into data products. So one is the usability, the quality metrics. I think usability, usage metrics, I meant by that. So yes, you might publish, it's like the report, you know, you might build something really fancy and then you put it out there and actually you have just two users, but you spend 6 months building it. So in a way it's the same. So if we produce data products and we make them available, how many consumers are actually using it? Are they fit for purpose? In this case, you would assume that because the domain is the one building it, it would have high usage, but that's not always the case. So there is a little bit of, on one side, the metrics around data engineering practices. So how many of our data assets are actually in CI/CD and DevOps. There is another one around usability. There is another one in data quality. There is going to be one around agent usage of those products. So if someone wants to create an agent that automatically pulls information from data products to be able to see how many of them have been able to do it successfully and with the right guardrails around. And also we're quite big on sustainability. So sustainability metrics. So whenever data products are made available, that they're also made available their green status. So the carbon footprint, the consumption, so that then initially is visibility, how much is it consuming, so that then you can see what you could do to reduce that footprint. So those are the key ones from a more operational side. But then there is the other side, which is, well, we did all of these things in data products because we wanted to create this particular feature for our customers. So how fast were we able to do that? Before all of this, it would have taken this length of time. Now we're able to do this in a shorter amount of time, which means that you not only measure it in the traditional statistics internal technology, but you also can measure it on the speed to market on particular products or features that you want to enable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Great. Thanks for that overview. Our time is almost up, but I do need to ask you, obviously, about the future and what's happening. And maybe my question is, what is an AI-ready data product? Or how is AI influencing your the way you think about data products? Or maybe already you built them, you deploy them, and so on.
So for me, doing this, the data product with the data contract, the right definitions, the right guardrails and policies in place will make it AI-ready.
Mm-hmm.
Because it means that that data asset is available for automatic consumption and programmatic consumption, but also the contextual information about that data product is visible and clear. The future I see is that many of our, if not all, but that's yet to be decided, many data or AI features or products should be only built when it comes from a data product because it's well-defined and it has the right guardrails behind it so that they contribute to the whole traceability and auditability. Is that a word? So the full trace of where the data was formed, what policies apply, is it consented, not consented, can it be used for Gen AI or not, and so on. You can see it in the data product. You have the AI data product, arguably. Mm-hmm. Then you have the AI feature, let's call it. I want to say it's a data product as well, but I know it's controversial. The AI product plugging into it, so you'll be able to see this is the data, this is what we can and cannot use it for, and this is the outcome that you have from the other end. So the future, I see it more of those approaches relying heavily on data products because of the high quality of them and the good definitions that they have.
Excellent. I think I think this is a great view. Did you say any AI product should be built on a data product? I think I heard that.
I know it's controversial. There are cases where you probably won't, but I think there's no AI without data. And if your data, the best state your data could be, in my view, is wrapped around a data product with the right data contracts in place, the right policies and ownership and governance. And if you want to build something that is great in AI, you should base it on something that is great in data.
I love it. That's a great final sentence. Naomi, thanks so much for all these insights and your experiences. It was really great. And I wish you all the best on your journey forward. And I hope to see you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for having me, Kasten.